The first time I talked with Candace Gorman was almost 2 years ago. She was managing her own law practice in Chicago. Back then, she decided to volunteer her expertise to help a couple of the men locked up in the military prison at Guantanamo Bay. One is from Libya, another's from Algeria. These days, her work with those men is full-time. She closed down her law practice, in part to concentrate on these cases, but also because she's afraid she's under surveillance. She started to notice something strange on the call display of her cell phone.
There were two calls coming in for every one call, and one went to a special operator, and the other went to the person that was calling me. I could hit redial. Usually I got a busy signal, sometimes I got a disconnect, but a couple of times I talked to a special operator who was very surprised to hear from me.
The future of Guantanamo Bay and what happens when some people think you're a terrorist sympathizer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. It's co-produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Candace Gorman took some time away from her legal work to campaign for Barack Obama. She's been particularly attracted to his promise to close that prison at Guantanamo Bay. In fact, she worked for Senator Obama on Election Day and caught a plane to Guantanamo at 4 o'clock the next morning.
It was just a quick trip down just for one day. I visited with one of my clients, Mr. Razak Ali, that morning, and I was hoping to visit with Mr. Al-Jazawi that afternoon.
Razak Ali, had he heard about the election, the results?
He had. He said that the guards told them shortly after 10 p.m., maybe 11 p.m. on Election Day, that Obama was the new president and that he had promised to close the place.
The guards told them that Obama had promised to close it.
They did.
Sounds almost like the guards are looking forward to that. Maybe I'm projecting too much there.
You know, I think some of them would like to see this place closed.
And Razak Ali, did he say that he's had an opportunity to discuss this with any of the other prisoners? Are they all pretty well kept isolated?
He's one of the 35 men that's in this part of Camp 4, where they're in a pretty open environment. It's more like a dormitory. So, yes, they have had opportunities to talk amongst themselves about the election.
Are they anticipating that they'll get a chance to go home soon?
I guess you could say they're hopefully hoping that this is going to happen, but I think they still remain skeptical.
I've been keeping up with Candace Gorman and her work at Guantanamo Bay for the past couple of years. There's no way for me to talk to her clients, Razak Ali and Al-Jazawi. We rely on Candace to tell us not just what it's like at Guantanamo Bay, but what those men there are saying to her. Here's what Candace told me back in February 2007 about her client, Mr. Al-Jazawi.
He is a Libyan national who had been living in Afghanistan for about 8 years. He was a shopkeeper in Afghanistan, married. When he was turned over for a bounty, he just had a daughter who was 2 months old.
I have to wonder if he really believed you were who you said you were, or whether or not this was just some other form of interrogation.
He said to me, "How do I know you're really an attorney?"
The time in Guantanamo Bay has been hard on Mr. Al-Jazawi. When I next spoke to his lawyer, Candace Gorman, he had just spent 6 months in isolation.
The thing that I noticed the most about Mr. Al-Jazawi in conversations with him, he would always look at me and talk with me, and now he is blinking all the time. He seems to have a hard time focusing. It's like he's not really sure if I'm there. He seems just disoriented. He is very depressed, as you could imagine, sitting by yourself 22 to 23 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Does he have any hope that he'll ever get out of Guantanamo?
Mr. Al-Jazawi assumes he will die at Guantanamo. He wrote me a letter in which he asked me to please promise that I would take care of having his body transported to Afghanistan when he is dead. It was very important to him that he be buried near his wife and daughter so that they could have his body near them. And I had to promise him that I would do everything I could to make sure that happened, even though at the same time I'm telling him I'm trying my best to get him medical care.
And so now we move ahead to Candace Gorman's latest trip to see Al-Jazawi. She was there at Guantanamo Bay 2 weeks ago.
Well, I did not see him this trip. It was really a pretty sad situation. First, I put in to see him in the afternoon. When I got there at 1 o'clock, they told me they made a processing mistake and they hadn't scheduled to bring him until 2 o'clock. Now, as you might recall, Al-Jazawi is in Camp 6, which is the worst of the camps there. He's in total isolation, and he's been there for 2 years. I asked if they could just bring me to Camp 6, because they do have meeting rooms there.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of phone calls were made by my escort, and then my escort told me, oh, no, you can't go to Camp 6, because Al-Jazawi is not in Camp 6 anymore. He is in Camp 4. And it got close to 2 o'clock, and then they told me that Al-Jazawi did not want to see me. And I thought this was odd, so I asked if I could have a note brought to him, which you're allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove over to Camp 4, and I wrote this nice little note to Al-Jazawi telling him how happy I was he was in Camp 4, and I'd really like to meet with him. I was only there for the afternoon. And the escort went in with the note, and 20 minutes later he came back and said, oh, Al-Jazawi's not in Camp 4. He's in Camp 6. And I'm thinking, how can they not know something as simple as this? They're down to 250 men, and they don't even know which camp my client's in.
Are you thinking also that maybe they're just trying to, you know, throw you off the trail or waste enough of your time that you don't get to see him that day?
Jerk me around, I think, was the phrase I used with the escort. Yes, I did get that feeling. And then I said, well, you know what? Now we need to meet in Camp 6. Because if I have to wait for him to be brought out of Camp 6, brought over to Camp Echo, it's going to be 3:30 before I get to see him. And I have to, well, I didn't have to leave, but they usually don't let you stay past 4:30, so I'd be looking at a one-hour meeting unless I could beg for more time and they would grant it. So then they got back on the phone again, and then they said, oh, well, he doesn't want to see you in Camp 6. He doesn't want to see you anyway. And I said, okay, let's go over to Camp 6, and we'll do another note, because now I'm not believing anything they're telling me.
Yeah.
Of course, I had to write a new note because I was congratulating him on being moved to Camp 4 in my old note. So I wrote a new note, and the escort brought it to a lawyer. One of the military lawyers came over and took the note in at Camp 6. And the prisoners are supposed to write back on the note, you know, whatever their response is, either yes or no, or, you know, whatever the situation is. And the lawyer came back after about a half hour with a blank note. Mr. Al-Jazawi did not write anything on it, but he told me Mr. Al-Jazawi really wanted to see me, but he was afraid to leave Camp 6.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. After a day of this Camp 6, Camp 4, he doesn't want to see you, he does want to see you labyrinth, Candace Gorman never did get to meet Al-Jazawi.
I think the mental strain of being in isolation for these 2 years has affected his mind, and he's having some problems coping. He is afraid to leave because they have a new scanning device that they make the prisoners in Camp 6 go through every time they enter and exit the building. It's one of those full-body scanners.
You mean the things that show you under your clothes?
Right. Why they decided to put something like this in the most secure facility on the base, where the men are in total isolation and not allowed to have anything, why they did this, I don't know. But Al-Jazawi is convinced that it's going to harm him physically, that it's going to make his health condition even worse. And he has asked me if I could try to meet with him in Camp 6 because of his fear of going out.
You said he'd been in isolation for 2 years, but how long has he been in Guantanamo altogether?
Almost 7 years.
I remember the last time we talked, Candace, you said that he was depressed, that he thought he might die at Guantanamo Bay. Any news on that? Any update on that?
I have tried to get, as you know, medical records for him and medical care for him. He's got tuberculosis. He's got hepatitis B. The courts have ignored all of my pleas. I was actually working on a new petition to the Supreme Court today. I'm planning on filing it this weekend when I'm in Washington, D.C. Once again, begging somebody to please take a look at this case and let him get some medical care.
He still hasn't been charged with anything, right?
That's correct.
You'd gone all the way down there. You know the guy's ill. You know that he's not in a good state of mind. All you want to do is talk to him. It seems like you're the only friend that he's got in the world. When they say, no, you can't go in, what were you thinking?
I'm thinking that his condition is probably so bad they don't want me reporting on this. I'm thinking that they're doing everything they can to make sure that I don't see him. And until I'm allowed to see him, that is what I will continue to think.
I was reading a story in the newspaper this morning about Muhammad al-Qahtani, the fellow who is thought to be perhaps the 20th hijacker, who's also at Guantanamo Bay. And it said in this newspaper article, Candace, that public military documents now show that this fellow, who's about to face new charges, has been subjected to prolonged isolation, sleep deprivation, forced nudity, exposure to cold, involuntary grooming, as well as requiring him to dance with a male interrogator and to obey dog commands, including stay, come, and bark.
They didn't mention the waterboarding? He's one of the ones that they've admitted waterboarding as well.
Do you know if your clients are subjected to any of this? Would you know?
Al-Jazawi was subjected to a lot of very cruel techniques early on. In fact, when he was moved from, I want to say Kandahar or Bagram Air Force Base to Guantanamo, he and a bunch of prisoners were forced out onto the runway nude with goggles and ear, you know, those ear things that they put on them and the goggles so they can't see anything. And they were all forced to pose as dogs. And their heads were all tilted a certain way so that they were all, it was a choreographed picture. And it was, you know, he described this to me. You know, the isolation itself is torture. And he's been in isolation for 2 years.
One thing that bothers Candace Gorman about the work that she's done for Al-Jazawi is that she actually came close to finding a new home for him. And she had news from his brother that she wanted to share with him, but as she said, after 7 years in Guantanamo Bay, he doesn't appear to be in any shape to even sit down with his lawyer. I'll talk more with Candace in just a moment. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. 2 months from today, Barack Obama will become President of the United States. All through his campaign, he insisted that he would move swiftly to deal with the military prison at Guantanamo Bay. Candace Gorman represents two detainees being held there. She was at the prison right after the election, and she knows about the anticipation there.
I would say everybody is waiting with bated breath to see exactly what President-elect Obama will do. We talked about it not only at the base. Now, I did spend the night there, so I did have a chance to talk with my colleagues from lots of different places around the states. And, you know, everybody was excited that Obama won, and everybody is trying to figure out what he's going to do. How will he close this place?
Barack Obama was on the CBS show 60 Minutes earlier this week, and he restated his intentions.
I have said repeatedly that I intend to close Guantanamo, and I will follow through on that. I've said repeatedly that America doesn't torture, and I'm going to make sure that we don't torture. Those are part and parcel of an effort to regain America's moral stature in the world.
Did you hear what he said about Guantanamo Bay?
I did. I'm very pleased. I just want to see the plan.
Do you believe it? Do you think it's going to happen? I know that you worked for Obama. I know that you are a supporter of him. But what's your gut telling you about this?
My gut is telling me that he is getting advice from people who don't know very much about Guantanamo. And that's kind of scary to me. Because some of the things I'm seeing about setting up a new court system, you know, these are all, I don't know if they're trial balloons being thrown out there or if these are the actual thinkings that are going on. But the idea that he would be thinking about setting up another court system is appalling to me. I really hope that does not happen. I really think that someone has to look at what the evidence is about these men, because they will see, and it's got to be someone trained as a lawyer, and they will see what I have seen and what all of these other lawyers have seen, and that is that there is no evidence against almost all of these guys. The idea of setting up another court system is ludicrous, and it's a time waster. And we need to get these men out of there. We need to get them settled. We need to help them readjust to life. And we don't need to spend another year setting up another court system that the Supreme Court will strike down while these men languish yet longer.
Eric Holder, the man who apparently will become the new Attorney General, is that encouraging for you?
I don't know very much about him, but I've heard good things, and I hope he will change that department around. It's an embarrassment. It shouldn't have the name Justice attached to it. Every day they do things in that department that just make me think of the old Soviet Union.
One strategy that Candace Gorman has used from the very beginning has been to search for some place, some country that would agree to accept her client, Mr. Al-Jazawi. She's been encouraged to believe that there was one solution even the administration would approve.
I'd like to close Guantanamo, but I also recognize that that we're holding some people that are darn dangerous, and that we better have a plan to deal with them. And part of closing Guantanamo is to send some folks back home, like we've been doing. And the State Department's in the process of encouraging, you know, countries to take the folks back.
Candace Gorman says she did that. She worked out a deal where Al-Jazawi would go to Switzerland. But then she hit a brick wall. The trouble, she says, came not from the people overseas, but the U.S. administration.
I put it together by just knocking on doors until someone listened. I made my way into the foreign minister's office after many pleas. I think they also wanted to hear more about Guantanamo. So I was able to meet with someone in the foreign minister's office in Switzerland. You know, I put everything in motion. I had, you know, the doctor that I had befriended through an acquaintance of my son's. He's a liver specialist, and he got his hospital to agree to allow Mr. Al-Jazawi to come there, and he obtained funding for him. And all the Swiss said was, U.S., ask us. And as you know, the U.S. has been crying, nobody will help, no one will take these men. Well, the U.S. refused to ask the Swiss to take them.
So all that had to happen was the State Department had to say formally to the Swiss, would you take Mr. Al-Jazawi?
Yes, that's all that had to happen.
And why wouldn't they do that?
Well, some might say that because Mr. Bellinger, who was the head of the department that deals with the detainees, didn't think he needed anybody's help at that time. And he refused. He said, Bellinger is the one that the Swiss talked to, and he refused. And he said, no, but we will give Mr. Al-Jazawi to you if you ask us for him. So in other words, the U.S. is saying, take our problem away from us, but ask us first to do it. And then we'll give them to you.
I don't follow. What difference does it make? Who asks for what?
For the Swiss, it made a big difference. They have to explain this to their constituents, and they wanted to be able to say that the U.S. government asked them. And I think it was a legitimate thing for them to say,
right.
to ask for.
But because the U.S. State Department then wouldn't ask the Swiss to take this man, the Swiss wouldn't take him, the U.S. wouldn't give him up, and he's still in Guantanamo.
Right.
Did Mr. Al-Jazawi know that how close he was to getting refuge in Switzerland?
He does. He knows that. I have explained all that to him. Of course, just like you're kind of shaking your head, he couldn't fathom what this was all about either.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Candace Gorman's a lawyer who represents two of the men being held at Guantanamo Bay. As she's been telling me, there is some anticipation that the place will close under an Obama administration, but no one knows how or when. Candace says on her last trip, she was unable to see one of her clients, Mr. Al-Jazawi. She says it was frustrating for her because she did have news for him. Nothing encouraging, but news nonetheless.
I wanted to talk with him about it, and that was in a conversation that I had with his brother. His brother is still in Libya. His brother told me that he was called in by the Libyan authorities, and that the Libyan authorities told him that the U.S. was going to release Mr. Al-Jazawi to his brother in Libya.
Wouldn't that be good news?
Well, until you hear the second part of it. The second part of it is that the Libyan authorities made his brother sign a document agreeing to immediately turn him over to the authorities of Libya when his brother is turned over to him.
Why do the Libyans have something on Al-Jazawi? Why would they want to lock him up?
Well, they don't have anything on him, but the fact that he's been in Guantanamo for all these years makes him look like someone that's particularly bad. And I don't know why exactly they want to play this game. It might be a secret deal. That was my feeling, that this was some secret deal between the U.S. and Libya. The U.S. saying, hey, we're going to tell everybody we're turning him over to his brother, but really you can just lock him back up again. I don't know. I just know that it's not a good situation. We don't want him going back to Libya, where his brother is going to be forced to turn him over to the authorities, and he could disappear like the two men who have already been released from Guantanamo to Libya. Those two men have never been heard from again.
Okay, so he can't go to a third country, at least the one that was selected, or that you selected, Switzerland. His home country, Libya, is as bad for him as Guantanamo, or so it would seem. What about just going back to Afghanistan, where he was?
Well, that's, of course, maybe the only other possibility. The men who are released to Afghanistan have all been imprisoned in a prison called Polocharki. It's a Russian prison that we've taken over, and that's where we keep the men who are released from Guantanamo until the Afghani justice system can get around to deciding whether they should be freed or not. I don't know what the conditions are like in Polocharki, because they have not allowed U.S. attorneys to go in and view this place, but it's hard to believe it's any better than Guantanamo. And we don't know how long he will be there, how long it'll take their justice system to get around to freeing him. And then there's the other problem, and that he's still an Arab in Afghanistan. And they are the ones that are carrying the brunt of the U.S. military presence there. They are seen as the reason why the military is there, and they're not treated very well.
I have to keep reminding myself that, to the best of anyone's knowledge, this man has committed no crime, right?
That's correct. And as you'll recall, I have seen the secret evidence. There is nothing. There is no reason for this man to be held. Our country has nothing against this man.
Did anyone ever find out what happened to his wife and to his daughter?
No, I have just, you know, hit brick wall after brick wall on this. His brother, who was in Libya, had someone call him. He doesn't speak Pashto. That's the language of Al-Jazawi's wife. She doesn't speak Arabic. So someone called for her and gave him a phone number to reach her. And he gave that phone number to me. I had a law student in Nebraska, of all places, contact me. She's Afghani by birth and speaks Pashto. And she volunteered to help in whatever way she could. So I gave her this phone number and said, could you please try reaching her? And if you can reach her, then we can try to, set up a joint call with the brother, have an Arabic translator, Pashto, do everybody at once on the phone and, you know, try to figure out where she is and what she needs. The line has never been answered. Speculation is she probably doesn't have enough money to put, you know, everything is cell phones in Afghanistan. There are no landlines. And she probably doesn't have enough money to feed the card. And recently we got another person called and said, here's a new number for her. And when I talked to the brother, he said that he had called this number, but it doesn't seem to be right. He gave the number to me, and again, I gave it to this wonderful student who's volunteered to help me. And the student emailed me back and said, there's a number missing. It's one number short.
So the number doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Candace Gorman represents two men detained at Guantanamo Bay. She says that she does a lot of research and work on the phone, and she started to worry that she was under surveillance herself. It bothered her so much she decided to close her own law practice.
Well, I have no other work now. I stopped taking clients in middle of 2007. I just didn't take any new cases because this was occupying so much of my time. I was also very worried about the eavesdropping that the government has admitted it was doing, and they have said anyone who is talking to terrorists, whether they're a U.S. citizen or not, is being eavesdropped on. And, of course, they consider my clients terrorists, and so I consider myself being warned that I'm being eavesdropped.
So are you saying that you had to go to your clients here in the U.S. and tell them that you were in some way a risk to them because you were being listened in on or spied on?
I told them that I could not guarantee the attorney-client privilege of our communications because my honest belief was that the government was listening in and that I thought it was better for them until these cases are over and until we get a new administration and until we get these things taken care of in a legal way, that it was better for them to have different representation and to not be confiding in me things that they wanted to keep secret. I hope one day that I'll start my practice up again, but I won't do it till I know that I am not being listened in on and that my clients can have the privileges that they're entitled to.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Candace Gorman says she believes that she has good reason for her privacy concerns. She told me something she noticed about her cell phone.
It's hard to explain because it's so visual, but on my cell phone, there were two calls coming in for every one call. And one went to a special operator, and the other went to the person that was calling me.
And on the call display, did that number of the special operator come up? I mean, could you call that number?
I could hit redial. And when I hit redial, usually I got a busy signal. Sometimes I got a disconnect, but a couple of times I talked to a special operator who was very surprised to hear from me.
What's a special operator?
Well, that's what I asked. It seemed like it was pretty special. But I never got any answers, and they always would hang up on me. I think I actually got through three or four times. But I brought my phone to an investigator and to my provider to try to find out what it was. And the investigator that I brought it to just looked at me and said, well, is there any reason why anybody would be tapping your phone? And I said, yeah, probably.
So you have no clients now except for the two men that you represent at Guantanamo Bay, is that right?
That's correct.
And you're not getting paid for that, right?
That's correct, too.
Okay. You know where I'm going with this, don't you? How are you paying the bills?
Savings. Fortunately, my husband still works.
And if you got kids at home?
One in college. One has taken the semester off to work for Obama and is now doing a little traveling. So that was a little bit cheaper semester. And then I have a daughter in high school.
How long do you think you can continue to concentrate just on the men at Guantanamo?
I know I will continue to just concentrate on them until it's closed. I just hope it's sooner rather than later.
It sounds like this is more than just a case for you.
Well, it's become my life. there are no other cases, and this is occupying all of my time. And, you know, the injustice and the fact that this is my country that's done this is appalling to me, and it makes me fight.
If you were to get up one morning and turn on the radio and hear the news story you've been waiting for, what would it be? What would the headline be?
Al Jazawi is in Switzerland. That would be my headline. Razak Ali to follow shortly.
What about just news that Guantanamo Bay is being closed in 30 days?
You know, I just don't know what that means. And until I see what the actual plan is, you know, if it's just moving the men to the South Carolina brig, no, that's not it.
Yeah, it's like some kind of... It's gone on so long right now that it's no longer simple to just shut it down.
It's no longer simple, but it can be done. And what it means is that we have to take responsibility for having men that shouldn't have been held in the first place. And that's something that the Bush administration has been and continues to be unwilling to do, and I hope the Obama administration will step in there and say, okay, let's take a look at these men really quickly. They should be looking now. And let's figure out where they can go that makes sense and how we can help them move on with their lives.
Candace Gorman joined me from the studios of WBEZ in Chicago.